Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, you're kind of stuck with me as long as your radio's on this station. And the volume is up above the minimum, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a problem, you can certainly call me. This is going to be an exciting show because my week has been the worst ever. And I'm going to admit right now, because I know that friends are going to call in and people are going to call in and tell you this, but I'm going to tell you. I have a boom lift up at the ranch. It's called a Genie boom lift, and I can't get it to start and run. And I have spent, I spent 50 hours on this, and I don't have spark and I don't have fuel. Now, on a normal car or anything else in the world except this thing, no spark, no fuel means the crankshaft sensor's bad, camshaft sensor's bad, the ignition module's bad, all that kind of stuff. Well, the ignition module, I'm told, is about $400, so I'm kind of waiting before I buy that and plug it in. So I'm working on that. Another problem in my life is Tom Blackwell. He owns Blackwell Automotive up at 40th and Greenway. He pretends like he knows a lot about cars. Really, he gets his help from his wife and his general manager, Christy. And when you look at Tom, you think, oh, gosh, he's really smart, but he's not. He's just not. And you know he's listening because I told him to call because I'm going to do this. He can fix a car every once in a while. He handles that northeast quadrant of the valley for me because it's difficult for me to find a repair shop that can pass the filter I've created for them to be part of my best car repair shops list. And it's very important that I trust them and that they know right from wrong and that they raise their hand when they accidentally or whatever make a mistake on somebody's car. Tom does that on a regular basis. Sometimes it's a 1 an hour, 2 an hour kind of thing. Can you feel like I'm getting kind of ornery today? I'm just warning everybody who's threatened to call in today about my Genie and my boom lift. But anyway, Tom's a good guy. He does vintage cars, he does motor homes, and he does your normal family cars. And he's as good as it comes when it's around the valley. And he knows right from wrong, and he's got a great staff, and he's got a general manager too, Aaron and Christy, and they help one another, but Aaron, he's a home run hitter. And when you talk to Aaron, you'll understand why I think he's a great guy, and it's because he's just so well-rounded and so skilled with respect to handling customers at the front counter and drilling down to what really kind of needs to be looked at or what needs to be done. Okay, last week we had a caller, and he called in about a pickup truck, and he had some harsh downshifting. So what that means is the automatic transmission, as you accelerate from 0 to 50, like that. Well, a harsh downshift is like when it goes from third to second. It's really abrupt. It shakes the whole vehicle, and it immediately drops, 10 miles an hour off your speed. A soft downshift or a normal downshift, it's kind of like you're driving along in fourth gear and then you go to third, real nice smooth downshift, nice transition. But anyway, he said, I've got this gentleman that sent me this email, he said he had periodic hard downshifting mostly from second to first just before it came so hard. And sometimes it would hit so hard between second to first gear that it would jolt everybody hard, and it felt totally wrong. But it went to the dealer a couple times. They said it was normal. I did notice that the worst the transmission acted was when the transmission temperature was up over 170, and it typically doesn't do it until it's at 170. So at 99,000 miles, I had the dealer confirm that the problem was there. Finally, they confirmed it. They pulled the transmission and replaced what he thinks is the pump and several other parts. And it just so happens that our company goes through several of these trucks each year. And none of the trucks had this issue except this one. So hopefully this may help the gentleman. And we talked to the other guy last week, and my idea was let's wait until something forces you to do something. Obviously, you can pull the pan and check the transmission pan for snap rings and broken parts, and a good technician could look at it and look at the odometer and say, okay, well, this is a normal amount of metal because transmissions shed bits of metal. That's the way they work. So it's not a big deal to find metal in the transmission pan. And if you have a transmission service at 90,000 miles, there's going to be a whole lot more than if you have it done every 30,000 miles. Because the big portion of the metal that it's going to shed, clutch material, black clutch material, is going to be from 0 to 30,000 miles. And that goes on any automatic transmission vehicle there is. So those are the kinds of things that we talk about with respect to, you know, dealing with transmissions and stuff like that. We also had another customer who called up and he had an auto start problem. And the auto start is, there's these GM cars that when you come to a stop, they turn the engine off. And it's a fuel saving device and it's an effort to give you better fuel economy. And then when you take your foot off the brake and you hit the gas, there's a really smooth transition as the car starts and takes off for you. Now, the first time I ever drove one of these, I was driving it down to TV3. And when I came to the first intersection, the engine died, and I'm right kind of standing there at the traffic light. And I'm kind of panicking because this is a brand new vehicle, and I've got a television spot to make, and this vehicle's, the engine's dead. And through the grace of God, I just took my foot off the brake and kind of hit the gas thinking it wasn't, you know, the motor wasn't loud. And as soon as I touched the gas, the vehicle started up and took off. Now, the starter on these vehicles has to be a little bigger than the average bear because it's going to be used 20 times in between the time you park it at the grocery store and 24 hours later. It's going to be used a lot. So it's a bigger starter. It's a bigger electrical system. But so far, they've been good. There's a wide variety of reasons that your stop enable is going to go bad. But one of them seems to be, especially on the General Motors products, there is an auxiliary battery in the trunk of your car that just does that. And when that battery, the cables get corroded, or when that battery finally dies a death, then that will eliminate the vehicle from shutting off, the computer from shutting off the engine when you come to a stop. And then as soon as you touch the throttle, boy, the motor just comes alive and you take off nice and smooth. So if you've never driven one of those cars, it's kind of interesting to drive. But that was something else. So 602-508-0960, you can call in and we can talk about cars. And I'm fishing for a Genie guy, somebody who has worked on Genie boom lifts. It's a Z45-25J. J is for jib. And I figured that out the other day. But, gosh almighty, this thing is just beating me up, and I have never had this kind of problem on any kind of an internal combustion engine. But this thing is sophisticated, and on top of all of that, it has a dual fuel system, so it'll run off gas or propane, and you can flip a switch back and forth. And as I add fuel and propane to the motor, I artificially inseminate the motor with propane into the intake port. I still don't have anything, so I pulled the spark plugs, one spark plug out, and I have no spark. And so I've got all this these moving parts. I don't have spark or fuel in delivery, and I've got the engine cranking over, and intermittently the thing will backfire, and intermittently it'll start for a second and shut off. So the only thing I really haven't checked is I got to check to see if it's a timing chain or a timing belt. But this is a relatively new lift, and I'm not sure that I should have to be doing this early, but then again, who knows? I just don't want to pull the whole front of the motor apart to look at the timing belt or timing chain and find out everything's okay. But the backfiring and the intermittently it's fine and intermittently it's not is kind of a good hint. So many of you, and especially us older guys and my older friends, are scared of oils that start with zero, like a 020 or a 1520 or a lot of the diesel oils are 5 weights, 520s and 530s and 540s. There's nothing to be afraid of it, because let me explain what the numbers mean. The numbers mean, the first number, 5, it means it flows like a 5 weight when it's cold. And you want the oil in your car to be very viscous. We want it to be flowable. We want it to not be peanut butter, not look like frosting on a cake. We want it to be iced tea, a water. We want it to have that kind of consistency so it can provide lubrication to your engine. The other number, we'll talk about a 520. The other number, it flows like a 20 weight when it's warm. And the 20 weight protects hot metal and the 20 weight is designed to provide superior lubrication under all kinds of loaded condition, all kinds of speeds, all kinds of RPMs and stuff. So the oil's job is to get in between the moving pieces of metal and create a thin film of oil where the two pieces of metal, if they touch, they don't wear, they don't shed metal. So we're just lubricating the internal components. And obviously, your fuel economy would be affected if we had peanut butter in your engine or if we had water in your engine. Obviously, your fuel economy would be a whole bunch better if you had water or oil, the consistency of water in your engine, as opposed to oil with the consistency of frosting or syrup or, you know, mud. It's a big deal. And so with newer model cars, and certainly in the last 10 and 15 years, we've gone to oils that make a lot of the older guys, like my friends and me, a little nervous. Because we like that 30 weight, 40 weight, 50 weight. We like that big pillow effect. We want the big, thick oil to protect our engines. But today, we know that the thinner stuff gets in between those two pieces of metal much quicker. It provides a superior lubrication. It carries the trash and the heat away. And it does it a whole lot better than peanut butter. So let me just create a visual here for you. I have my hands in front of me. Like I'm praying. The palms are together. And I'm going to rub my hands together, and I think you might even hear it. Okay, that's your motor. Your motor is running, and there's all kinds of pieces of metal that are rubbing on one another. So I ask you, the faster you rub your palms of your hands together, the more heat you'll feel. Now, in order to provide lubrication, and in order to control the heat, and in order to carry the trash out of that joint, do you want to use water or peanut butter? And I'm using those two because they're so diametrically different. Water would get in there quick. It would grab a hold of the heat, which would cause the water temperature to rise. It will flush out the jazz and the metal or whatever there is and keep going. Peanut butter, it has a tough time getting in, and then it turns real hard and it turns real black, and then it has a tough time going out. And peanut butter is the descriptive word I used about the old guys and their oil from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And I'm one of them. That's what we used back then, a 30 weight, a 40 weight, a 50 weight, a 20, 50, all those big heavy-duty numbers because it made our engines last longer. But here's the truth of the matter. Water provides the oil with the consistency of water, but the lubricating properties of a synthetic oil. That's all we need. And today we have motors that are lasting 2, 3, 4, and 500,000 miles. And in the days of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you didn't see those. Everybody was smoking oil and fogging mosquitoes when their engines had 75,000 miles on them. Today my wife's car's got 140. Mine's got 150 on it. They don't blow any oil. They don't leak any oil. We did a metallurgical test not too long ago on my last two oil changes, so we could compare the two. And there was no growth of any kind of negatives inside the oil that we sent to the laboratory. So you can do better than that. And I'm not somebody who drives, you know, like I've got a hot cup of coffee between my legs all the time. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, or if you want to discuss some car-related things, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around in Mesa since 1970 in their present location, but the parents of Brian and Thelma have been in the gas station business in Mesa since 1950s. They started off with two bay gas stations, and they would be Union 76, or they'd be Shell, or they'd be Mobil, and they started working on cars there. Brian and Thelma are the derivatives of two of the big families that had those service stations a long time ago. They've been doing a really good job. They provide expert auto repair, light truck repair, motorhome repair, maintenance services to their customers in Mesa. They have ASC-certified technicians, which means that they've been tested. And they've passed the tests that are expected of people to know how to work on a transmission or an air conditioning system or the electrical system. So ASE tests are certainly an important thing. They also follow up with friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle's due for service, so you're likely to get a note in the mail 90 days after you have your oil change or 6 months after you have your oil change, letting you know that you should look at your door sticker and see if you're due. So if you want your vehicle to be looked at by people I really respect, Brian and Thelma and their crew, then Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa is on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. When it comes to the old cars versus the new cars, in the old days, it was nothing to go to the fair, and there's a guy with a small engine running, and he would touch the spark plugs with his fingers and kill the engine. And as his fingers got kind of close to the spark plugs, you could see sparks jumping from the tips of his fingers, but he'd kill the engine. That's not anything I suggest that you try, because it does hurt, but obviously he's been trained to do that. But I can tell you, he wouldn't do that today on cars today, because back then we may have had 13K of spark, and today we have 100 or more. So today when you get bit by a spark plug or a wire underneath of a car, of a gasoline engine that has been made in the last 10 years, it'll make you want to cry. It hurts. It doesn't hurt for long, but it's kind of like getting shocked hard. And it wakes you up, and usually you go into the lunchroom and have an early lunch just while you can shake the cobwebs out of your head, because you were stupid enough to have somebody hit the key where you were holding on to the spark plug and you forgot to just leave it on the manifold for the noise. So Thompson's Auto Repair, good place to go, and they've been around since those days of 13,000 volts versus 100,000 volts of spark plug fire. And we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Richard.
Richard, good morning.
Hi, how are you? I've got a question for you about, I have a 2001 GMC Sierra with 275,000 miles on it, and it runs terrific, but it's got an oil leak, and I have to put a quart of oil in it about once a month, and so I've always got clean oil. Do you see any reason why I should have to change oil anymore, or maybe just to change the filter once in a while?
No, I agree with your philosophy. If you're putting, you know, a quart in that often, then mm-hmm. Yeah. There's going to be some arguments.
It's not burning. It's not burning it. It's just leaking it.
Okay. Why not just fix the leak?
Well, because I'm 74 years old, and I don't want to crawl under there, and I don't want to pay somebody to do it.
Okay.
So I just, it's not a huge leak, but, you know, about a quart a month.
Okay. But is the tailgate spotted up?
Does what?
Is the tailgate got spots of oil on it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, to answer your question, yes, if you wanted to skip the oil changes and you just wanted to add a quart every month, then yes, that would be certainly something that you could do. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're checking the dipstick on a regular basis, so there's no chance
right.
that you're going to
uh-huh.
drop way, way below the ad.
Right.
So no,
right.
I think, but let me just tell you something. There's an oil pressure switch at the back of the motor, and the oil mm-hmm. pressure switch probably costs $20. And it leads off the back of the motor, but it runs down the bell housing, and everybody says it's a rear main seal that costs $1,000. But uh-huh. it's really the, and the other day we had a guy bring a truck in, a GM as a matter of fact, and he said he's put three rear main seals in it and no one can get the oil leak fixed. Well, we put dye in the engine and we get a black light out, and we just take the truck for a 20-mile spin and come back, and the valve covers were leaking at the back of the valve covers, and they were leaking over the bell housing, making the oil leak look like it was the rear main seal.
Oh, I see.
And so finding out where it's going is really easy, because all we do is put dye in the oil. We go drive it, and we come back, put on these stupid funky glasses, mm-hmm. and look, and it tells us lemon, lime, lemon green, or cherry red, or orange oil just right to where the source of the oil is. So it's not that big of a deal.
I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah.
What does it cost to have something like that fixed?
Well, you want to have it in, you want to go in with the idea that you're going to have the thing done, because it's all part of that. But I don't know. We've never really done one just to tell them and then they've driven away. It's usually part of the process. So it's probably quoted in the checkout. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. that that's probably going to be somewhere in a half an hour to an hour's worth of time, depending on what they got to clean up. Mm-hmm. But if you were to change your oil and then you take it in and you say, put the dye in, and then I'm going to drive it for a couple of days and then bring it back to you, you would avoid some of those checkout charges because that's what they would have to do if you didn't help
them. I got you. I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Now, something else let me tell you. The oil or the PCV valve sucks air from one valve cover. On the other side, there's a breather. When the PCV valve fails or the hose gets plugged or the filter gets plugged, then we no longer have the positive crankcase ventilation system running, which means we're sucking fumes out of the motor and burning them again. So we don't have internal pressure. Internal pressure causes oil leaks. And so if you wanted to, then I would probably go get a new PCV valve and a filter. The filter goes on the opposite side of the valve cover that the PCV valve is, and try that and see what happens.
Oh, great. I'll give that a try.
Okay. All right. Good luck
to
you.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Richard. You bet. So oil leak and PCV and die. I make notes to myself so I know what the heck I said. 602-508-0960. If the lines are wide open, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a shop in town that I'm really proud of, and that's Auto Dynamics up in Sun City. I got a letter from a guy, and he says, I'm 80 years old, and he says, and I wanted to put an HEI distributor in my truck. Now, let me explain. The old distributors in the older trucks had points and condenser, and we were constantly messing with those, and those are the ones that have 13, 14,000 volts to them. In 1976 or so, they came out with an HEI, high energy ignition distributor and system. And boy, the high energy is right. It made you cry like a little girl when you got shocked by that thing. Well, he wanted to upgrade his truck from a points and condenser distributor, which would mean he has to deal with that two or three times a year, to an HEI, and it's a drop-in with new wires and plugs. So he hired Auto Dynamics to do it, and he wondered if they could do it, and his words to me were, Kevin went and got Matthew. Matthew came out, and I watched him do it, and he knew what he was doing, and it wasn't his first rodeo, and he just plugged and played that distributor and put it in and started it up and set the timing, and I drove out of there happy as a clam. So he wanted everybody to know that Kevin and Matthew from Auto Dynamics in Sun City is the team. Kevin's up front, and Matt's in the shop. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And my name is Mark Salem, and we're going to go to Norm. But real quick, let me just tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil and his staff have been around since 1968. If you go up and down Central Avenue from 40th Street in Washington, Van Buren, if you use that one-way street, one coming in and out of there, you've driven by Automatic Transmission Exchange many times. He's got a big sign out front with an old transmission on the top of it. So at 40th Street in Washington is one of the finest transmission shops I know about, and it's called Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been around since 1968. They'll take a ride with you if you can demonstrate the problem to them. They'll do that. They'll also put the car up on the rack and look for oil leaks as well. But they want you to call them and make sure that we can fit you in. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, good place. Let's go to Norm. Norm, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
I'll tell you what I got. I got two things. One, I've got a 1999 Silverado 1500 4x4. It's got larger than stock tires. They're about 33s. The gears in it have been lowered to 410s to kind of compensate. That works out good. Calibration for the speedometer even comes out really close with that combination. The problem is that the ABS runs on the wheel sensors, and, of course, the speedometer is running off the drive shaft. So the computer sees that difference, and the ABS light keeps coming on. Now, I know I can buy a calibrator for $400, one-time calibrate that and straighten that out. But I don't want to buy a $400 calibrator. And there used to be all kind of guys in town that could recalibrate speedometers and stuff. So I'm trying to find out who to take it to.
Well, you're telling me things that I've never heard before, and we do this work all the time. So I don't know why you think that the computer's getting that your ABS light is on because the computer's getting a speed sensor signal off of the drive shaft and a different speed sensor signal off the wheels. That isn't true.
Okay.
It isn't true.
That's all the stuff I've read.
I don't care. But, I don't care. It isn't true. The ABS monitors the wheels for braking. So it's monitoring the speed of each wheel, but it doesn't care what the speed is. It can be 20. It can be 100. It doesn't care. The ABS doesn't even wake up until three wheels are doing 65, and one of them goes to zero. And the ABS goes boom, and it dumps the fluid to that brake and says, "Keep rolling, boy." So I don't know. There's Dick Speedo and Tack over on Hayden Road and McKellops. Keep your stories to a minimum because he's an old kind of a crabby guy. Just go in there and say to him, first of all, if you got an ABS light on, you really need to have that addressed first.
So, well, it just comes on once in a while.
Okay. Well, the question is why? Are all the tire diameters exactly the same?
Oh, yeah. Then there was no problem with this until it was just regeared.
Okay. If what you're saying, if all your math is right, and this is a pretty sophisticated transition, if all your math is right, then there shouldn't have been any changes. So does your GPS on your phone agree with the speedometer on your dash?
Like I said, the speedometer comes out about no change.
Okay. But see, this is what I don't know where to send you because you've come to, it appears to me that you've come to a conclusion on what you need, and I'm saying it's not an ABS issue other than the lights coming on, and the question is why is the light coming on? Because that's your problem. Your problem is the light coming on.
Okay.
And so somebody needs to go in there and figure out why is the light coming on. That's all.
Okay, real good.
That's all.
One more question if I can.
Go. Sure.
Okay, on a 2012 Jeep JK, heater control valve is the one in the center that controls the amount of heat, and it controls a blend door actuator, and this is a sequential thing, so it goes, you know, hot, you know, 10%, 20%, 30%, and we had a guy put it on a scan tool. He checked it and said that, yes, it is, in fact, saying, you know, the 10%, 20%, it's showing all that. The problem we're having is, if you turn it all the way to the hot position, you will get hot. If you then start turning it towards the cold, it will stay full hot until you go completely to the cold side. And going the other way does the same thing. If it's in the cold, all the way cold, it will stay all the way cold until it hits 100% of the hot, and then the door just slips over.
Okay. I wouldn't even take this in my shop. What you're describing is you think that there's something wrong with it, and I'm thinking to myself, we got all these electronics, we've got temperature sensors all over this car, and you want some kind of a quick response when in reality this sender may be on the inlet side of that blend door, and it may take a while for the computer to figure out that all of a sudden I've never fixed anything like you just said, that somebody was complaining that the blend door is causing this problem. And the blend door, folks, is it's a Y kind of thing. It has cold air on the top left of the Y, the letter Y, and it has hot air on the top of the right side of the Y. And then the stalk of the letter Y is the vents to your car. So we're going to open and close the cold and the hot and mix and match the air to give you something out. But it's not going to respond immediately. It's just not going to. It's just not going to. But anyway, Norm, I don't think I can help you on either one. But there are some air conditioning guys in town that specialize in air conditionings, and you can do that. But I think what I'd do if I were you is I'd hunt down somebody who's got a 2012 Jeep like yours and do the comparison between the two of them. And that's what I'd do. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We have open lines available if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you want to discuss a wife's tale, or if you want to discuss an argument between a husband and a wife, or my shop and my technician, and all that kind of stuff. Then, you know, in a good-natured way, we can kind of give you some guidance. And based on the information, I'm kind of like a computer, although my wife objects to me using that terminology. She says, your head is mush, and it's nothing like a computer, but junk in is junk out. So if I say to you, does it blow when the tire blows up, does the sidewall collapse or does the tread right where the tread meets the sidewall? And if you give me the wrong information, I'm going to go in the wrong direction. So that's kind of way it is. So there's three answers to my questions, yes, no, or I don't know, and those all work. I've been doing this since 1988, so we're pretty good at handling calls, and you're welcome to call us about anything car-related. I'm not a marriage counselor. I want to remind my friends not to call me for that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Rick, how are you today?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. I have an 02 Ford Thunderbird. It's got the V8 in it. It's that retro-looking one, the convertible.
Uh-huh.
A couple of weeks ago, I was driving it, and the temperature went way up, and then shortly after that, it went right back down. I was going to pull over and park it, but the temperature just went right back down to normal. I was reading the manual, and it has something about a backup system for overheating. I don't know what that is, but anyway, I was concerned, so I have a family-owned mechanic shop that I take some of my stuff to, and he ran the vehicle, and I had put more fluid in it, just to radiator fluid in it, to get it over there, and he ran it and he didn't take it out. I asked him to take it out and drive it, but he just let it sit there and tried to get it to overheat, and he couldn't do it. So I asked him, you know, is that really the temperature, or did that system kick in, that secondary system? And he said, well, we can't get it to overheat. I don't know if he understood what I was talking about. I don't really understand it either. But
okay, well, this is the time when I get to ask questions, okay?
Okay.
So let me just ask you a question. Do you have a gauge or a light?
It's a gauge.
Okay. And I want you to divide the gauge into half, and then I want you to divide it into quarters.
Okay.
Where was it? Where does it run normally?
Right in the middle.
And where did it go this time?
When I got concerned, it went all the way up.
Okay, all the way to the three-quarter mark, or all the way to
all the way to the top.
Okay, did it go to the needle? Go to the red?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And then, but can I say something real quick?
Go.
But then it came right back down to the half again.
Okay. But then in the after that, you said you did top off the coolant.
Yes, when I got home.
Okay. I think they're tied together because that's exactly the symptoms that you have. I want your needle to run between half and three quarter.
Okay. Uh-huh.
That's your car wants to run there. That's new technology that's been around for 15 years. We know now that we need to run the oil temperature in the engine over 220 because we want to boil the water out of the oil. And water boils at 212. So we want to run the motor pretty close to 220 so that the PCV valve will suck the water vapor out of the oil, because water and oil equals mud. And so that's why some of these newer model cars are going 400,000, 500,000 miles with no major engine work, is because we're running the motors at 220. And it's a good thing. So in your case, I think, could there have been a tie between a low coolant level that got an air bubble in it and temporarily did, and of course we can't pump air. We can only pump liquid, fluids, the water pump I'm talking about. So is it possible that we had an air bubble in the cooling system and you saw the needle jump up and then come back down and then it hasn't been there yet? I can't explain why he didn't do what you asked him to do, but it obviously hasn't come back yet after you put coolant in it. So maybe is that it?
Last night when I drove it about 20 miles. I pulled it into the garage, and I thought I smelled a little bit of coolant, you know, smell burnt.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, well, maybe that's just some residual that was from when I put it in last week. But anyway, I left again, and when I was pulling out of the garage, there was a small puddle of coolant on the ground.
Okay. Well, then 1 and 1 equals 2, and 2 and 2 equals 4, because you got a small leak. That's what caused you to lose enough coolant to have a spike in the temperature. You added coolant in it, which temporarily fixed it, but now you have evidence of a leak. You call your garage and you say to him, how much to have my cooling system pressure tested? And what I'm going to do is, me, the shop owner, I'm going to take the car in, and I'm going to squeeze the upper radiator hose to make sure it's not rock hard, because I'm not going to open that cap when it's that way. And so I'm going to probably just put some water over the top of the radiator and have it idle and cool it down as much as I can, get the cap off of it. But then I'm going to look at the cap, and it's going to say 16-pound cap, and I'm going to put an air pump on the neck of the radiator, and I'm going to go to 17 or 18 pounds.
Okay.
And I'm going to walk away from it, and underneath it's good and dry. I might have it up on a hoist, and I'm going to let it run. I'm going to set my timer for 15 minutes, and I'm going to come back and, oh, this clamp is loose, this freeze plug's leaking, the water pump's weeping, the radiator's got a seam that's leaking, but it's easy to find. It's just, that's the process. We just pressure test it, and we take it a couple of pounds over cap pressure into an area it doesn't see very often, and we'll find the leak. So that's what really needs to happen. You need to have somebody pressure test the cooling system.
How, West Valley recommendation?
Are you close to 38th Avenue and in school?
No, not really. I'm more in the 75th Avenue and Bell. But I can,
okay.
Get to a lot of places.
Auto Dynamics in Sun City.
Was that the commercial you hit?
Yeah.
Was that every year talking about that?
I was just.
Guy with the changing out the points and stuff.
Yeah, he took the points and distributor out of an old Chevy pickup and had Kevin and Matthew install a HEI ignition system to in it.
Yeah.
And yes, that's yeah. You just go there and just say you want him to do a little cooling system work. You understand he's pretty good with taking old distributors out and putting the newer model in. but you just want him to pray. Now, a lot of times if you take it in for an oil change, what we do is we don't I'd say 50% of us don't charge you for the pressure test, because we're just going to put the pressure tester on it when we raise it up, and we're going to do the oil change and check your tires and your brakes and look it all over and it's just part of the process, and a lot of us don't charge that for an oil change. So,
sure.
You know, you might kind of work it into that, but that's what you say. It appears I've got a leak. There's a little bit on the ground, and if you could put a little piece of tape on the top of the hood above what you calculated as the leak, that will help us. Just a piece of masking tape. And just say, right there, it seems to be right below that. My wife stood over there, and I stood over here, and we triangulated it, and right there is where it was leaking.
So that means I have to have my wife out there?
Nope. You just have to have her stand there in her nightgown some Saturday morning, and she stands there, and you stand here, and you two point to the center of the hood. And don't you get me into that kind of a conversation.
Good enough. So Auto Dynamics is located where in Sun City?
Hold on just a minute. Let me see if it happens to be on the sheet. I know where it's at. Oh, here is south side, north side of Grand and 99th Avenue. Grand and 99th Avenue.
Easy enough.
All righty.
Well, thank you again. We appreciate all you do for us, Big Tree guys, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you very much for the compliment. And we have open lines available at 602-508-0960. There's five lines. You want one, grab one. And we're going to be here for another hour from 11 to 12 talking about cars. We'll be right back. Oh, are you kidding me?
I do have a caller for you, Mark.
You know what? I'll take it.
Say hello to Susan.
Susan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you, Mark. I have a 2015 Nissan Altima, and I had a recall on the hood latch, and I went to the dealership to have that done and to have my oil change. And the dealership, of course, found, you know, all this work that needs to be done on my car, and I can't, obviously, I'm just not going to go back to the dealership because the price is just very, very expensive. I was wondering if you could tell me if someone you would could recommend that works on Nissans in the Cave Creek area.
Blackwell, he's at 40th Street in Greenway. 40th Street, that's as close as I can get you.
Okay, 40th Street in Greenwell.
Greenway, yeah, 40th Street in Greenway.
Okay.
Let me comment. I was going to talk about this next hour. This lady friend of mine, actually she was... She ran the Better Business Bureau for years and years, and we have been friends, and she took her car in for a recall, and they wrote her car up for $2,100 worth of work, and she had it done. Now, she knows how to use bad words. okay. So she calls me up. She calls me up, and she says, "This is what I got about it." And I said, "It's too late. It's too late. You already spent all the money." So I said, "Send me a copy of your bill," and I sent it out to three or four other shops, and I said, "I want you to blindly bid this. I want it down to the shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. I want everything. I want all you guys to do me this favor." She spent $2,000, I think it was, and everybody came in right around the $1,500, give or take $200. So the highest one was $1,700. The lowest one was like $1,300. There was some questions there that we all had to agree on what we were going to bid and stuff like that. But here's the problem. Years ago, we got to see you every 3,000 miles. And we got to just nibble at your pocketbook a little bit at a time. So we got to sell you a tire rotation this time, and then we got to sell you a cooling system flush once a year, and then we got to do this, and we got to do that. Today, your car has an oil change interval of between 7,500 and 15,000 miles. We've lost all of that. We no longer see you every 3,000 miles. We see you every 10,000 miles, 12,000 miles. And so we've lost all that. Well, the technicians, most of the time in our industry, the technicians are going to work off of a flat rate, like $12 an hour, $15 an hour, $17, or they're going to work off a commission off of the hourly rate of what they do. Well, the technicians are spreading their wings a little bit, in Mark Salem's opinion, and we are starting to sell stuff that we wouldn't otherwise sell, and we're starting to create the need for stuff. And I can tell you that easily half of the cars I look at, that I'm willing to look at, don't need the work that they've given. And here's what really bothers me about this lady that I know. There were some specific symptoms for the work that they did. For instance, a clunk. You come up to a traffic light and you push on the brake just normal, and just before it comes to a stop, there's a clunk. You feel it and you hear it. Then when you take off, just as you accelerate gently, there's another clunk. Do you have that? No. Well, they replaced a bunch of parts that's the symptom for. You know, I don't know what to tell you. And so forth and so on. So I would suggest, whether it was an independent store, a chain store, or a dealership, I would suggest you get a second opinion. And I would strongly suggest that you learn how to say this. Are you ready?
2 minutes.
I want you to repeat after me, Susan. I want you to say, "Would you tell me what symptoms I have that these repairs are going to fix?"
Symptoms that would need to be fixed. Okay.
Because if they say, "Oh, your cooling system needs to be flushed." Okay, well, what have I got? Well, it needs to be flushed. What you want to hear is when I opened up your coolant jug, it's brown water, and coolant is either orange or red or green or blue.
Right, okay.
And so, and then, well, you said I needed lower control arm bushings. Yes. What symptoms are you going to fix? Well, when you come to an abrupt stop, there's a clunk, and when you take off abruptly, there's a clunk. I have that. Okay, I'm going to fix that. You see my point?
Okay, so just take the diagnosis that they gave me, but say, what symptoms is having that done? Because I've got coolant plus, brake plus, hoses, coolant. Drive belt replacement, battery service, cabin air replacement. The bid, I think, is more than what my car is worth. I'm like, my goodness, I have zero symptoms, and I have all those things written up. So
you have what Mark Salem calls a wallet flush. Cooling system, brake fluid, transmission system, differential system, Freon system, brake system. We're going to flush your wallet out. Nobody asked you when the last time you had your brake fluid flushed. Nobody asked you and they didn't look at their records probably to see any of that. See, that's the problem.
Right.
So you, and you know what? Those guys that are good, this is what we're going to do. Come on, we're going to take you out to your car. This is brand new transmission fluid. It's red and pink. Yours is brown and black. I'm going to pull the dipstick out. I'm going to take the dipstick and I'm going to wipe it on this white piece of paper. Look at the coolant. Here, this is the stuff I'm going to put in. This is the stuff I'm going to take out. You are bought and sold for at that point. I'll talk more about this in a few minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here to help you talk about your car, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got two callers on right now. We have three lines available, but I got to do a quick spot for Strictly Diesel. Nate at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair has a Better Business Bureau A-rated, A-plus rated shop. He has truly some of the finest diesel technicians this valley has to offer. If you are looking for a shop that's a service, repair, parts, die-hard diesel guy, and both foreign and domestic light truck diesels, then I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road is where Nate's at Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs. You can go to his website, too, Strictly Diesel, at 24 hours a day, and they have a website that also has some enhancements for diesels and some discussions about different things you can put on your diesel. But Nate's a good guy, and it's when it comes to the Chevy, the Dodge, the Ford diesels, and some of the import stuff, he's the king when it comes to those. That's Strictly Diesel. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew, hang on just 1 second. Susan, let me explain something to you real quick. In the old days, we used to change all the fluids about 30,000-mile intervals. Today, most everybody is 100,000 miles plus or minus 20,000 miles. So most everybody's due around 100 for some of the fluids. Now, cooling system, transmission fluid, power steering fluid, whatever else you have on the car. But it's so easy to look at that kind of stuff. I know that Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are not a good time to drop into a shop that you've never been at before and they don't recognize you as a customer, but it's okay in any other time to just pull, park in the driveway and just say, I live around the corner and I heard you guys were really good. Would you look at my cooling system and tell me what you would, I'm being told I need a $200, $150, $100 cooling system flush, and I'd like to get a second opinion. And would you also give me a price for that? It's okay to do that. Just try to avoid those really busy times and try to avoid the Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, which is the toughest times for both of us. Andrew, how can I help you today?
Yeah, hi, Mark. My daily driver is a 2017 Honda Civic hatchback with the, I think it's a 1.5 liter turbo.
Yeah.
Nice car, great car. I wanted something for daily driving, and I wanted to get something that would get me into retirement without any repairs, and this car fits all those bills. It developed a problem. I got an emission warning light on the dash.
Uh-huh.
And I took it into AutoZone to use one of their OBD2 readers, and it said I had a vapor leak. Now, I am automatically assuming it's because the car doesn't have a gas cap. It has these two doors that flip open once you stick the nozzle in to fill the tank, and then they automatically close. Am I wrong for thinking that that's what it is? Now, I've taken it to the Honda dealer, and he said, well, it's going to be $300 for us to evaluate it. And, that to me, that sounds like somebody's shining me on, and I don't like to be shined on, so I don't take it to him. But
okay.
The car is almost 5 years old, and I'm coming up on probably having to have it emission tested, so I want to get this fixed.
Okay. You got two choices. You can either have someone diagnose this, and I would love to be able to – I want to raise my hand if the money that's on the table is a $300 checkout, count me in. Count me in twice.
Yeah.
We have a system of valves that open and close, and we suck the vapor off the tank and we burn it through the engine, and your system is down. More than likely because it's, a 17. It's got a broken plastic line on it. It's got one of the solenoids, got a bunch of trash in it. If you can clean it, fine, and if you can't, you replace the solenoid. But you have to find it first. And what we typically do is we open up the system, and we can, most of us will open up the system, and we will pump smoke into the system. And we'll have the car up in the air, and we'll have two guys inside the car, one on the passenger side, one on the driver's side. And then the driver's in his rearview mirror, he's watching, or the passenger, whichever side, the fuel inlet, we're watching that. And then we got a couple guys underneath the car. Well, the hookup time takes 10 times longer than the test time because all you do is turn on the air and we pump it full of smoke. Wait, it's leaking over here. The line's broken right here. Oh, I got one over here too. Okay, fine. We're done. So I'd like to be in on that $300 checkout, but you're not going to – you can do what everybody else does. You can go to AutoZone and talk to that three-whiskered kid, and he'll sell you a bunch of stuff. and he'll sell you the purge valve, and he'll sell you all the solenoids, and he'll sell you all the rubber lines and stuff. And at the end of the day, it's going to be something silly. But you only have two choices, and it's a bad idea. You go to AutoZone, you get the code. The code says that your problem is in Maricopa County, or it's in Gila County, or Yavapai County. We got to find out what square inch of that earth it is. So it's just telling us that the evaporative system is raising their hand and saying they got a problem. Someone's got to go in and find it. Now, the last thing you want to do is go replace that filler neck, because that's expensive.
Right.
So
yeah,
most everybody's going to be, and you know, this is one of those things that sometimes sometimes, I don't want you to miss that word, sometimes it's, you authorized $100 to smoke test the entire system, and we did find it, and the smoke test was $100, and to fix it was $6.50.
Yeah.
That's kind of the best you can hope for. But that's the only choice you have. And you're going to have it done before emissions. And it's going to have your car captures data for a long period of time. It has to have a clean code. The code has to be gone. It can't be a historical code. It can't be in the sunshine behind the wall when you go in through emissions. They know that. So you can't clear it on Monday and test it on Tuesday.
Yeah, I kind of been defeating the system because the car has remote start, and when I come out of work in the summertime, I start the car up already because by the time I get there, it's already cool. But because of it's throwing this code, I can't use that. It won't operate that.
Your car won't start?
It won't start via the fob.
Okay.
In the remote position because it's got this error code.
Yeah.
So I removed the battery terminal and reset the computer. And once I've done that, then it will remote start.
Yeah.
But once it's thrown the code, it won't remote start.
Well, and, you know, I didn't know that, but I understand why they would do that. There's lots of codes that could be construed as carbon monoxide polluters and fuel leaks and all kinds of stuff like that. So I can understand why Honda may, but that's the first time I've ever heard that, but it makes perfect sense. Do you have a shop that you use on a regular basis?
No, I suffer from being an engineer, so I do most of my own work.
Oh, my God, don't tell them you're an engineer when you walk in the door.
Tell them you
sell Hostess Twinkies. You drive a Twinkie truck or something. What part of town do you live in? I'll make a constructive suggestion that I make not a cent on.
Well, I'm in southeast Gilbert.
Okay.
And, you know, so Tempe is on my way to and from work, and I know you guys are off of, or you were off of Elliott Road there.
Warner.
Yeah, Warner.
Call for an appointment because we're by appointment only unless it comes in on a tow truck. And do you work at Allied Signal or across the street?
No, I work at General Dynamics.
Okay.
No problem.
And I'm teasing you because I'm surrounded by engineers my whole life. When I do my expert witness stuff as a mechanical expert, I'm with engineers all the time. And my favorite line to them, and now they just punch me, is I say, "Oh, who do you drive for?"
Yeah. No, I tell my wife all the time. I says, "You know, you married the cheapest guy in the world." And We don't like to spend money.
I am surrounded by 100 engineers, and 90 of them I would love to live next door to, and it's no different than auto repair shop owners. 90 of them are good, and 10% of them are the biggest you've ever met in your life.
Yeah.
So there's no difference between your profession and mine. But yeah, call to make sure, and you're just going to simply say, "What's your checkout fee?" That's all you're going to say. And then you're going to call me with an estimate. Yes? Yes. And so there's not going to be any duplication of labor on our shop and many other shops with respect to finding it and fixing it. So if finding it is the same as fixing it, then there's not going to be any extra charges.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you. All righty. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. If you have to call or you want to call, now's the time. And Gil's going to answer the phone. Gil and I have been working together since 2011. So actually, we've been best of friends for a very, very long time. And he knows that He knows I use bad words every once in a while, and he's really quick on that button that pushes and does away with the bad words.
If you want to take Radu, he's been waiting a half an hour.
Oh, you know what? Thank you for that. Radu, I'm going to take you now. I'm sorry. That's my fault. It's not Gil's. What can I do for you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've got a weird dilemma with my mom's car.
Okay.
I'm very mechanically inclined. I work on Dodge diesel trucks, 12 valves and stuff like that, and I think this issue is a little bit beyond my pay grade. So she's got an 05 Toyota RAV4. It's a two-wheel drive. It's an automatic. And recently started developing this problem with the traction system with the ABS. What it's doing is you can drive straight up and down a hill or climb a hill and stuff like that. And what it does, it pretty much applies the brakes either on the left side front wheel or the passenger side wheel. And it's very intermittent. You know, sometimes it will do it, sometimes it wouldn't. And what I found out so far is that one of the motor mounts for the transmission on the driver's side was broken. I replaced that and thinking that the problem's kind of going to go away, you know. But it's not. It's, like, very intermittent. It doesn't throw any codes or anything. And I'm kind of, like, lost on what to look for next. I was thinking about maybe getting one of those fancy scanners, which I don't have to look at the signal for the speed sensor in the front wheels, and then kind of eliminate that and then hunt for the next thing.
Well, but, yeah, first of all, a scanner costs thousands and thousands of dollars because a scanner allows you to look at the serial stream data and the communication going to and from the PCM. So it's not something that you're going to buy, and most people don't buy it because we can spend $15,000 for a scanner. So I wish I don't know. There's just so much wives' tales out there. You have an ABS sensor that's fallen apart. If you want to try to figure this out yourself, here's how you can do it. Maybe yourself. You need to keep track of. You clear the line, you clear the code, and you drive the car, and you go out to behind the bashes, and you do circles on Sunday morning to the right, and do 5 or 10 circles, not recklessly, just in a circle, and then go drive it, and then go to another behind the Safeway and do circles left. And you should be able to figure out which way the light comes on. And then you can just... I don't have much time for this, so we can't go tit for tat on this thing. This is an easy fix for those of us with scanners and just to go drive it. Somebody sits in the passenger side, he looks at all four wheels, I'm out there doing donuts in your car, I'm going circles left, circles right, fast stops, slow stops, and all that other kind of stuff, and pretty soon we'll figure out which one it is. But you're not going to figure it out without that unless you want to just do them all, and that's going to be kind of expensive. But that's the best I can offer you.
Yeah, just one of them was $400 or something, and I just don't want to fire up the part scanner, you know.
Yeah,
if I don't know for sure if that's what it is, or, you know.
If you're going to pay for a diagnosis, you need to look them in the eye and say, if I go order a sensor and put it on and it doesn't turn off the light, then what do we do next? And the shop is going to say, bring it back and let me check your work and let me check your sensor and let me check sure that you got the right one and the right part number and on and on and on. That's how it works. But I got to run. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're going to back up just a little bit real quick. And Susan called in and she's taken her car in for a hood latch issue and she got a laundry list of flushes. And I just want to touch base on that one more time. Part of my world is self-defense for car expense, which is the name of our radio show. And self-defense means protect yourself. Susan, if you're listening, or anybody who's in that situation where they take it in for an oil change and they get a big long laundry list, make them politely ask them to explain what they saw. And write it down on the ticket, what they saw that led them to believe that you needed a cooling system flush. And then ask them to staple their business card, the person you're talking to, would you staple your business card to this piece of paper? See, when you ask somebody to sign something that says something, then they're less likely to do that, or they're likely to forget to do that if they don't want to have their name associated with this that the technician said. then the technician is well known for coming up with this kind of stuff to butter his own bread at the on the back of the customer's pocketbook. That happens in our industry. There's no hiding from that. So it's up to you to create the self-defense mechanism. Would you write down what it is that your technician saw? And because they're going to call you before you pick up your car, hoping they sell you stuff. I want to know what you guys saw. And here's the thing. A lot of times it's flushing and fluids and flushing. And here's the deal with that. It's very lucrative. We have these sophisticated machines that cost thousands of dollars. But, man, we can wham-bam that car out. Plug and play, plug and play, plug this, and phew, it takes new fluid, flushes out the old fluid, and you watch this clear line, and what comes out is brown, and then all of a sudden this cherry strawberry soda pop comes out, boom, shut it off, and we're done. But the piece of equipment could cost $10,000. It doesn't typically cost that much, but it can be that much or even more depending on the car it's going to service and how many different adapters it comes with. So the idea is that protect yourself. Have them write it down. Sign the ticket. Have them put a number with it. You need a transmission service. Why? Because you're due. Why? What do you mean I'm due? Well, your manual says that you should do it at $60,000 and you're at $100,000. Have you ever had it done? No, I haven't. Okay, well then you're due. That's a good conversation. On the other hand, the same conversation is you need a transmission service. Well, how did you come to that conclusion? Well, Harry didn't tell us. He's the technician. He didn't tell us. Well, could you ask him? Oh, I'm not allowed to talk to the technicians on the floor. Okay, well, somehow or another, I need to know what you saw that led him to believe that I needed to have my transmission serviced. So as long as I can't get good answers to my questions, then I'm just going to kind of, gee, you don't need to put that down on there. Or, yeah, just put it down there and then say that, put down the technician's name and said he said that you need a transmission service. The default is what does it say in my owner's manual? How many miles are on my car right now? Wait a minute, aren't you a little early on that transmission service? Or I've already had that done. You didn't know I already had that done? Well, according to my records, you guys did it 6 months ago. That's the kind of back and forth you should have. So it makes it easier. You don't have to worry about that at Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue in Indian School because they're not going to play those silly games. None of the shops I talk about play those games. We're all busier than we know what to do with. We're not out there soliciting new customers, and the last thing we're going to do is go on fluid flushing binges where we start every car that comes in needs cooling system, differential, engine flush, power steering flush, you know, transmission. It's crazy. But, like I told you, they're pretty lucrative. So, Larry Harker's, 38th Avenue Indian School, great diagnostician. He's been around Phoenix since 1967. A good guy, and if you live in that area, he should be your shop. Les, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking the phone call.
You bet.
My daughter has a 2016 Nissan Sentra SV. We bought it new. We've maintained it per spec. It has about 92,000 miles on it. About 3-4 months ago, she'd be driving on the freeway, doing 70, and then all of a sudden, no power. Pushes down the gas pedal, nothing. Has to creep over to the side of the road and get off, and she can limp around at 35 miles an hour. She'll turn it off, sit there, start it back up. It might continue that way. Sometimes it corrects itself. I've been in the car. It's done it. We've taken it to the Nissan dealership. They run the codes. Nothing. They've kept it overnight. Can't duplicate it. I'm stuck.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
Well, it sounds like it's going into limp mode because it still allows you to move it, and it's cup, you know, the top end speed. This is a difficult one for all of us. It's just tough to figure it out. Has anybody checked fuel pressure? Did anybody put fuel pressure gauge on it and then maybe bring it through the crack of the hood and tape it to the outside of the windshield? Did you see anybody do anything like that?
No, we take it to the Nissan dealership.
Okay.
She's my daughter, so I say take it there because obviously they know Nissans. You pay a little bit more, but
yeah.
It goes in and it comes back out.
All right.
That's the situation.
Yeah. I got two comments. Number one, the independent repair facility is like a veterinarian who works on elephants and mice. Nissans, just Nissans. in reality, they all have spark, they all have fuel, they all have fuel pumps, they all have the same transmissions, they all have the same fluids, they all have the same alignment spectrum. A car is a car is a car with few idiosyncrasies. The difference is going to be motivation and dollars. That's it. And how convenient they are. I would think that somebody would want to put a fuel pressure gauge on there because she's got 92,000 miles, and if you've never put a fuel pump on there, I'd want to know when the last time we put a fuel filter on there. The fuel filter will mimic a shutdown by the computer to where it controls your speed, but it's because there's only enough fuel to go 35 miles an hour. So, I mean, I'd hang a fuel filter on there, and if it came back, I'd probably hang a gauge on there, and I'd say to her, keep an eye on the gauge. I need that gauge 50 to 60 all the time. I'd probably put a fuel pump relay in it. If you want to guess, put a fuel pump relay in it. So fuel filter, fuel pump relay, try that and see what happens. Does she have a check engine light on now?
No. No check engine light at all.
Now, the other thing is you want to kick the catalytic converter. So crawl underneath there in your old clothes and kick it when the car is cold. And if there's anything rattling inside there in the catalytic converter, it's because the biscuits comes loose. And when the biscuit comes loose, it plugs the exhaust and it drops the speed to 35 miles an hour.
Got it.
And that's about a $600-$700 ticket there or more.
Okay. Bottom line is, it doesn't sound like it's a transmission problem to you.
No, heck no. You don't have anything that says transfer. Right. And one had tried this. Try to manually shift it next time it does that. So she pulls the automatic shift handle down to low, and then she pushes it forward, click, and click it too, and have her manually shift it. But it's not going to be a transmission.
Okay. Excellent. Okay.
Okay.
That makes me feel a lot better.
Okay, good luck.
I appreciate that. Make it a good day.
You bet.
Thank you.
All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Me giving him advice about what I would do is things that I would do and charge you $150 an hour. Kick the catalytic converter. Really and truly, you lift it up in the air, you take a rubber mallet, you hit it a couple of times, you're done. But you have to know what a good one sounds like and what a bad one sounds like. And then the driver has to explain the symptoms, and it has to match what you already know between your ears. So that's kind of, and to be honest with you, you go to marksalem.com and look at my best car repair shops, and these are the dogs in town that really do a good job fixing people's cars. Marksalem.com. And we'll be back in a minute. Well, if you live up on I-17 and Deer Valley Road, there's a good shop up there called Action Auto Repair. I've known Tom since 1983. We've been friends for a very long time. He's not a friend of somebody who's ripping people off, and neither am I. So we both know the right way to do business. He does a really good job. Tom owns Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley. Family-owned, operated shop. He's been servicing Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. And they're well known for quality workmanship, and they have good customer service and a fast turnaround time, and the technicians are ASE Master Certification. What that means is there's 8 ASE certified tests. If you take test number 6, then you are certified in alignments, because it's alignments and front ends and stuff like that. If you take climate controls, then you're certified in air conditioning and heater. And then when you take all 8 tests, you are a master certified technician for automotive. That's bumper to bumper on the car, and I've been that way since 1991. And I think that's 29 years. and I still have a little grease under my fingernails. I do right now because I just got done working on the Genie boom lift that I can't fix. But nevertheless, it's important. Let's go to we don't have anybody on the phones, but we'll give you the number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you can give us a call if you have a car question or a car problem or anything like that. But folks, right now, there's a whole lot of selling going on because business is slow. And here's what bothers me the most about the selling part of our industry. We write down that, and especially fluid changes, we write down that you need to have your cooling system flushed or your injectors flushed. We need to flush your transmission, or flush your differential, flush your cooling system. But see, there's something missing there. It's like, when was the last time you had this done? Because if Salem changed it in October 2 years ago, and now it's at somebody else's shop, then that shop's not going to have the ability to know that Salem changed that fluid 2 years ago. Or the other way around. If my car's at his shop, it doesn't know. We don't know. So that's part of that process from the people who play by the rules, and that's if you haven't had your transmission serviced in the last 2 years, then you are due for it now. And here's a price that you can shop me on. That's really the conversation that needs to happen. That's it. How much is yours? How much is yours? How much do I write my check for before I leave home? $230, and I'll give you some change. Are you sure? Yep, I do this a lot. Okay, fine. That's it. So those are the kinds of conversations that you have. But right now, it's just crazy because our business has basically the newer cars and their elongated stopping points for all kinds of stuff has just taken a third of our business away. So we're no longer changing fluids every 30,000 miles. We're doing them at 100,000 miles. We're not rotating your tires every other oil change. We're rotating your tires every oil change, but where we used to have three oil changes, now we only have one. So there's this going on. Then in the summertime and in the heater time, or in the summertime and the wintertime, we have hot and cold issues with air conditioning and heaters. And those don't typically fall under the owner's manual. But here's your default. Your default, when you take your car in for a repair, no matter whose shop it is, set your owner's manual on the dashboard. Let the technician know that it's there. That's kind of intimidating because they know that you put it there and they're wondering why, and that's okay. Because in reality, he says, well, you need a transmission service. Well, when is it due? It's due at 100,000 miles and you're at 110. Well, how do you know I haven't had it done? It's pretty brown. It's pretty brown. Okay. How much is yours? $230. What does that entail? I'm going to flush all the brown out and put all red cherry transmission fluid in. The color is red and cherry colored. Okay. And how long is yours going to last? Every bit as long as the first one. You went 110,000 miles, mine will do 110,000 miles. Okay. Thank you. That's the conversation you should have. If you ask, a lot of times when you ask the service writer a question, they're not going to know the answer but there's nothing that says they can't get the answer. So here's my business card, my email's on there. Would you ask the technician why he thinks I need a transmission service? And don't add the second part of that because that you just did one 6 months ago. That's the most embarrassing thing in the world is that happens a lot, believe it or not, is somebody says you need a transmission service, you need to have your power steering fluid flushed, and you go, wait a minute, you just did that six months ago. And then they pull it up on the computer and they go, oh, he must have been looking at another car and he thought it was your car. That's what they're going to say. It's just self-defense. You know, it's your job to protect yourself from people in the auto repair industry, the 10 to maybe 15 or 20% of the people in the automotive industry that simply are going to sell high profit items again and again and again to the flock of sheep that come by and leave their cars for their service. So just don't be one of the sheep. Understand what's in your car, understand what stuff is due, and when you know that your transmission is going to be needs to be serviced at 100,000 miles, then make a couple of calls and say, how much to service my transmission? And there's going to be two services. One is going to be 3 or 4 quarts of oil, a filter, and a gasket. That means that we're going to leave at least that many quarts in. The other guy goes, you know what, I want to flush it. So I want to flush the whole thing. So I want to pull the pan and replace the filter, but I'm going to do that second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stick this machine onto your two cooler lines, and I'm going to push new in and old out, and the lines are clear rubber. And so the red is going in, and I see brown coming out. I'm going to keep flushing until I get red coming out. Boom, I'm done. I'm going to button that up. I'm going to pull the pan, put a new filter in it, put the pan back on, and I'm done. So it's kind of a flush and a filter at the same time. But as you can well imagine, that's the best way to do it. So that's the way I do it to my cars. That's the way I sell it to my customers. This is what's best for you. But if you just want to change the pan and the filter, then I'm going to change 3 of the 9 quarts of the transmission. I'm putting new one in, but I'll also put a new filter, and we'll start over again. So that's how it works. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm going to go real quick because we've got some callers, but I want to talk about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's at Bell Road 917. He's been around since 1987. Kurt's was at one location, then he had a fire that just wiped out his business, and he ended up at the Bell Road and the I-17, and he's been there a very long time. He works on both domestic and import cars, gas and diesel, and he has one of the finest technicians who's a member of his family, one of the finest technicians that I know of. All my shops have some really good diagnosticians, but Kurt's and a couple of the others is just a star. And they're really, really good at what they do. So if you need a car or a shop for an oil change or for tire rotation, no matter what it is, then if you're near I-17 in Bell, Kurtz is a great place that you should stop at. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to, oh, by the way, the phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mike, you're up.
Hey, appreciate your show. Appreciate all the self-defense information.
Thank you.
I've got a 2015 Tahoe LTZ, and it rides as rough as a wood cart. I understand it's got this Magna Ride shocks, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it's best to replace those and get it back riding good, or should I change those out with conventional shocks and springs?
Well, I don't know that you need to do springs. Let me just say, if you're going to have to start replacing suspension components, then don't do that. Let me ask you a question. The tires, have you got aftermarket tires on there? Have you got aftermarket wheels? Is it a four-wheel drive? Is it got 36-inch tall tires on it? Have you changed anything, or do you have the factory tires and wheels?
Factory tires and wheels.
Okay, and is the air pressure on the factory tires and wheels on the door, is that the air pressure we're using?
Right, 35.
Okay, all right. And I ask that for obvious reasons because sometimes the tire will have 44 and people will put 44 because they're going to get better fuel economy, but that will change the ride as well. And so that's kind of why I was going in that direction. Has it been this way since new?
No. Okay. The last year, it
okay.
started getting a really rough ride.
And is anybody said anything during your oil changes that you need shocks, that they're leaking oil or they're broken or any of the mounts are broken, anything like that? Any kind of clues from any of the guys that are doing oil changes?
No, I'll do the oil changes myself.
Okay. Okay. You know, you've covered all the bases. I'm going to say that it appears based on what you've told me, because you know what you tell me is what I got to use. That shock absorbers are going to be your options. You have to be aware that half the time, at the end of a shock bill and installation, you haven't changed it any. And so don't get monovision where you're just looking at the shocks. Look at the tires, look at the wheels, look at the inflation, soften it up. Did that make a change? Because, see, if you soften up the tires and you go from 35 to 30, is there a difference? Can you feel the difference? And if you can't feel the difference, that's okay. And if you can feel the difference, that's kind of a clue. So it just depends. And then the tread wear on the tires, are you wearing the centers out, which means we can come down from the 35 mark? Or are you wearing the edges, which means we need a little bit more air? So the tires have everything to do with how it rides, and the shock absorbers, their job is just to push the tire down on the roadway. That's all. Keep the tire on the roadway. And so when you hit bumps and stuff like that, are the tires special six-ply off-road tires by chance?
No, they're regular...
Somebody's at your door. I can hear that. I think I'd drop the tire pressure down 5, maybe even 8 pounds and just drive it for a couple of days and see if that makes any difference. If it doesn't make any difference, it should make a difference because it should improve the ride, period. But if it doesn't make any difference, then it would sound like that the shock absorbers might be a place that you look at. Now, to find out what you could do, go to Rock Auto. Just go shock absorbers, plug in your car or truck, and see what they offer you. There's going to be a variety of shock absorbers at a variety of price points that will be applicable for your car. And so to answer your question, can you go into a different brand other than GM or Ford or whatever? The answer is heck yes. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Good luck to you, Sam. You're up next. How can we help you?
Hi. I've got a problem with brakes. I replaced the brake booster, the shoes, the springs, all the components, master cylinder, all done about a year ago. But my pedal is really hard. It doesn't seem to go down much when you push on it or apply the brakes. And the master cylinder and the booster were not a combination unit. I had to, you know, do the adjustment on the rod. And I'm just wondering if that rod is too long in there, would that be a reason why I don't have much travel on my brakes?
Well, I want to tell you something. I would be really... my panties would be wadded up really tight if I caught one of my technicians messing with one of those rods. We all know you don't do that. We just don't.
Okay.
You just don't. If you're going to get a booster, and it comes with that brake application rod, then it's already, that rod inside that booster is for whatever master cylinder you bolt to it. So you are describing perfect symptoms of somebody who has changed the rod. But I think in your particular case, you just need to shorten it a little bit and to put a little bit more. I mean, I need an inch worth of play on the top part of the pedal before you ever feel the brakes begin to apply. I want an inch worth of play on the top of the pedal.
Okay, because it's got maybe, I don't know, 3/16 or
yeah.
Less.
Well, you just got it
it's
too
really
long.
It's really hard.
Just two bolts, pull that master cylinder back, pull that rod out. You know, measure it and then drop down. I'd go a quarter. Well, I probably go a quarter of an inch, maybe an eighth of an inch the first time, maybe, and then another eighth of an inch after that. But I think you'll get it. You have the skills to figure out. Okay, this is where it needs to be.
Okay, I'll just drop an eighth of an inch at a time until I get at least an inch of play.
Okay.
Before the pedal moves or hits the applies a brake.
Yeah. Now the other thing you could do is do you have a parts store that recognizes you by your face?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, you could go into an auto parts store where the three whiskered kid lives and ask him to pull a booster for your truck, and then pull out your calipers and slide the rod out and do a caliper measurement on the rod, stick it back in the booster, and tell him, you know what, I'm going to talk to my brother and see if he wants to buy this.
Yeah, that would be a good one to do. Just have to remember to take my calipers.
Yeah, take your caliper. Or you could just take the rod, put it on a piece of paper, and just draw a line on the end of it. And put the,
down,
you know, wad up.
Yeah.
But, and then give the kid $2 or $3 to buy his soda pop or something like that, because you know he was hoping he was going to sell you a booster and all you want is the dimension on the rod.
Yeah.
You know, if you patronize a store and you do that, if you're very gracious about it, there's nobody that has a hard time. You might find some grizzly haired old guy sometime that gets mad about that, but no, there's times my parts department has done exactly the same thing on a part. Is let's order the part, it comes with whatever, we're going to measure it and send it back, and we tell them we just need to take some specs off this. That's all. So it's something that they've seen before. Okay.
Okay. All right. We'll try that. Thank you very much.
You betcha. You betcha. What I suggested is not necessarily, it's okay to do. I think that there are a lot of auto parts stores. If you have a chance to be a hero to a customer and they're going to come back and do business with you, that's okay, I think. That's okay. And I think that's what we're after. Okay. We got somebody else. Who might that be?
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. My mother-in-law just got a $3,500 estimate from the dealer to replace rodent damage on her 2021 Honda CR-V, and it's parked outside in New River. And what can she do to prevent that from happening again.
Well, is her insurance company going to pay for the damage?
They don't. Well, they just got the estimate this morning, so okay. They're going to call the insurance.
All right. Well, there's two different issues here. It is a well-known fact that when we see rodent damage, that the insurance company for that car is going to be paying for the damage. It is a well-known fact that some shops will inflate the estimate, knowing full well that the insurance company is going to whittle on them. But if we start at $3,500 and they only whittled to $32, really that was a $27. So between $27 and $32, there's an extra $500 there. You hear what I'm saying? So I don't know how valid that's going to be, but I will promise you, your insurance company will negotiate a fair price. I promise you that. As far as the rodent damage is concerned, there's just all kinds of things underneath there. There's noisemaker. There's electronic stuff that has ultrasound stuff that the rodents can hear. There's traps. Does she live in a farming community? Does she live where there's lots of rodents and stuff?
It's on the edge of the desert. It's in, I don't know if you know, Pioneer RV Park. It's up off the 17 Pioneer Road.
Yeah, yeah.
So she lives right on the edge of the desert there, okay. You know. So it's wide open, basically, to whoever. I mean, there's javelina in the backyard. There's coyotes.
Okay. There's just all those old cowboy ways. I know that this one guy swore to me, and actually I tried it and it worked really good. He took cayenne pepper and he dissolved it in water and he put it in a small spray bottle and he'd get underneath there and he'd spray all the areas that they had been coming. And he'd do that, you know, once a month. And then he just quit doing it, he said, because, you know, there was no more problems. And I said, how did you test the ability of that? And he goes, well, after I started mixing it, I just kept touching it till my tongue and till it burned like hell. And then he says, that's what I used to spray. And I said, well, did it clog up the sprayer? And he goes, yeah, you have to crush it. And he says, and I use my wife's rolling pin and I just crush it into a powder and then I mix it with the water and I do this. But if you just get on there and you say, rodents eating, you know, the wiring of my car, what do I do? You're going to find 100,000 different ways to do that.
Yeah.
You know what? There is one way you can do it that that most people don't like, but I suspect that I will make sense to you. I take a big piece of screen, like a screen door, a big 10-foot by 10-foot piece, and I park the car on top of it, and I hook 110 to the wire and I hook the ground to the car.
Yeah, but this is sitting outside. This is just out on a driveway. Anybody can walk up there.
I know.
You could be electrocuting your knee.
I know. But when the animal stands up and reaches for the car, there's an instantaneous sizzle and the smell of burnt meat. And if he lives, he'll tell all of his buddies that they don't want to eat her car. But that was the old cowboy way. When we had barns and stuff, we used to do that, and it was no big deal. But one time, one of the rodents caught fire and ran over where the hay was at. And so I think at that particular point, we all decided that we'd probably go with some. And they have noisemakers, too. But in your case, you're in an RV park, so you're not going to be able to start blowing an air horn because there's some stupid rodent underneath their car. So
right.
Some of the guys, too, will go underneath there with some self-tapping sheet metal screws, and they'll put some screen door stuff underneath it and then just put four or five or six screws in that engine compartment area just to keep them out of that. But they'll crawl on top of the tires, and they'll go in through the strut rod connection and the mud flap there, and they'll go into the engine compartment that way. So you're fighting a battle that all of us have fought. You just get on the Internet and look around, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, good luck. Rodent damage. But see, on radio, what's really cool is I draw the picture with my mouth, and you can all see that rodent sizzling underneath the car. Mark@marksalem.com is my email if you want to continue the conversation.